You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. It's your host, Corbin Smith for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me, as always, my co-host, Rob Rang. Happy Wednesday to all of our listeners. Jam-packed show coming your way. Going to talk about some new additions the Seahawks made to their roster today. One of them being a pretty darn big name, and he's a big man to go with it. Help support your local businesses, whether they're your corner stores, coffee spots, or favorite shops. Local businesses have always been on your team, supporting you and your community. But right now, more than ever, local businesses need our support, so let's be there for them. The next time you go shopping, make the choice to shop at local businesses and look for the contactless symbol and tap to pay with a contactless Visa to help support your community. Because where and how you shop matters. Visa, everywhere you want to be. Official partner of the NFL. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. After months of weaving through the aisles, the Seahawks have finally finished their off-season shopping list by purchasing some snacks. Damon Harrison is officially a Seahawk, though I don't think that anyone saw him signing as a member of the practice squad, Rob. But as Pete Carroll mentioned, that's just simply the way that the new rules are allowing teams to take advantage of this.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing, Corbin, is that in the past, you know, if you were going to be signed as a practice squad player, then you had to have, you know, just a couple of years of NFL experience. And of course, with a guy like Snacks Harrison, who has 9 years of NFL experience, he wouldn't have qualified in the past. It would have been a slap in the face, so to speak, even if he had qualified. But I think that the way that Pete Carroll described this is that basically this is just a formality, that this is making sure that Harrison is in shape, allowing him to get acclimated to the way that Seattle runs their defense. Obviously, Seattle typically runs a four-man front. A lot of the Harrison's experience in the past has been as a traditional nose tackle in a three-man front. There could be some transition there, and because of the practice squad rules being expanded due to the COVID-19 pandemic and the way that the NFL has treated it, then I think that the Seahawks are doing a great job here in that they are bringing in a player, giving him a little bit of time to acclimate, and then yet still being able to promote him to the active roster as soon as absolutely possible.
Yeah, they truly are taking advantage of the rules here. We've seen them the last couple weeks. They've promoted players for game day. They could do that with Damon Harrison for this game coming up against the Vikings. Now, Pete Carroll made it clear he needs to see Harrison on the practice field first before he knows whether or not he's going to have a chance to play on Sunday night against the Vikings. He's a smart football player, as Carroll pointed out. That's not going to be the issue, though. It's just how fit he is. He's a big dude. We're talking a 350-pound defensive tackle, so the Seahawks have to see what he looks like on the field, where he's at from a conditioning standpoint, and physically. If he's going to need a week or so to get ready, then they can do that with him on the practice squad. And so I think these rules, quite frankly, after this year, even when things return to normal, I love this, that you can have 16 players on your practice squad, and a couple of them can be players that have any amount of experience, because in the middle of the season when injuries happen, it's really nice to be able to go out and get a guy like Harrison. And I know there were some fans this morning on my Twitter feed that were freaking out like, oh my gosh, any team can negotiate with him on our practice squad, we're going to immediately lose him. Look, this is what this says to me about Damon Harrison and the Seahawks fit. First and foremost, this was not about money. This was about contending. Otherwise, Damon Harrison is not going to be signing as a practice squad player to begin with. So clearly, that was his number one interest here. I want to play for a team that's going to contend for a championship. He's played in a lot of really bad football teams, and he's certainly never played on a team with a quarterback the caliber of Russell Wilson. So he was like, sign me up right now. I don't care if I have to start on a practice squad. And as you mentioned, it's just procedural. Once he's deemed ready to go, he is going to be on that 53-man roster. End of story. This is not a one-week flyer where they're just going to see if it works. He is going to be on the 53-man roster. They've had their sights on him for several months. They finally got him into the facility. He's passed his COVID testing. So now it's just a matter of time. He might be, a call up on Sunday, but he's going to be on that 53-man roster before it's all said and done here. And this is really a great addition for players like Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright. You have one of the best run stuffers of the past decade now in front of you. And I think this is the real X factor. Carroll was kind of mum on this when he was asked from another reporter about this. But I think having Damon Harrison in there at that nose tackle spot could be beneficial for Jaron Reed as a three-tech pass rusher. I'm really looking forward to seeing the influence that he has on the way teams have to block him up front. If they're having to send two blockers at him, that's going to make life much easier for Reed as well as the linebackers.
Yeah, I'm happy that you mentioned that, Corbin. And we focus so much on Anthony Rush and Brian Monet as the players that might be impacted the most if the Seahawks were to sign Harrison. Now that they have, I'm not convinced that the team is going to just let go of Rush. Certainly, I don't expect them to let go of Monet, given the way that he has played after signing with the team as undrafted free agent last year and, you know, kind of excelling as a big run stuffer. Similar body sizes of all three make it a little bit unlikely that the Seahawks would keep all of them on the active roster at the same time. But I think that this signing gives you a little bit of positional versatility there, a little bit of depth at that nose tackle position. And of course, Seattle has used some of these really big guys at that five technique position before. But again, I like that you mentioned Jaron Reed. I think Puna Ford as well. I mean, these are two of your better interior pass rushers, two of your better pass rushers just in general. And while the Seahawks have really struggled to get quarterback sacks, as many people have mentioned, that the Seahawks lead the NFL in terms of quarterback hits. And so I think that this is something that might be able to, as you just said, create some one-on-one opportunities for Reed, create some one-on-one opportunities for Puna Ford. And I think that that's something that they might be able to exploit a little bit more. So while there's no doubt that by signing a player with Damon Harrison's size and his power, that you are definitely trying to improve your run defense. But at the same time, I think in a sneaky way that this might actually be able to improve Seattle's pass rush as well.
One other quick roster move of note. They made a bunch of moves today, but this is a player that I was bullish on coming out of Florida a few years back, the 2016 NFL draft. Jonathan Bullard, 6'3", 296 pounds, defensive end. I thought he looked like the prototypical five-tech defensive end for the Seattle Seahawks, so he was actually on my short list of players I thought they would look at in the first or second round of that year. They ended up trading up to get Jaron Reed, and Bullard has had kind of a disappointing career to this point. 3 years with the Chicago Bears, and then last year he played in 9 games with 6 starts for the Cardinals. Just 3.5 sacks, but this is a player that I have always been intrigued by, and I think if he's going to succeed, this is a scheme where he could get the job done as a rotational player behind LJ Collier.
Yeah, and again, another player that I'm, like you, I'm a little bullish on. I mean, have been for a while going back to his days at Florida just because he is a powerful player. He actually, you know, my scouting report on Jonathan Bullard coming out of Florida was very similar to the scouting report I wrote on LJ Collier coming out of TCU. He is not a guy who is ever going to be a dominant pass rusher, but at 6'3", 290 pounds, he has the ability to play inside or out. He's got long arms, powerful hands. He's very violent with those hands. I think that Bullard to me is a player that fits in best. If we were talking before about the 4-3 and 3-4, that Bullard to me plays better as like a 3-4 defensive end. His job is to be able to take on would-be blockers, be able to shut him at the point of attack, allow other defenders around him to be able to make plays. But the NFL has shifted so much towards the pass, Corbin, as you well know, that guys like that don't necessarily have a great fit. He was drafted high. There was all these expectations from the Chicago Bears when they selected him, and unfortunately for him, he wasn't as successful. And Seattle wound up stealing him off of the Arizona Cardinals, roster. And I think that this is another guy that was going to be able just to add to the flexibility, the physicality of Seattle's defensive line. To me, it's kudos to John Schneider and the Seahawks scouting staff. I think that they just made two big time signings here with Bullard and, of course, with Harrison.
And the other thing about Bullard is that size, almost 300 pounds, how heavy his hands are. He's a better athlete, at least when you look at his combine numbers, than what LJ Collier was in a lot of regards. He was a better athlete. So this is a guy you can slide down in pass rushing situations, and he can play that three tech role, maybe even lined up in the one tech, and he can pass rush at his size. And so this is a sneaky good move, them poaching him off the Cardinals practice squad. And I think this is a good scheme for him. When Rasheem Green returns, maybe it'd be a little tougher for him to stay on the roster, but certainly for the next few weeks at least, he's going to get an opportunity to get some plays behind Collier, and maybe he ends up carving out a role with this team for the rest of the season. Very intrigued by this addition. When we come back for the second quarter, it's time to start breaking down Sunday's matchup, Seahawks-Vikings. We are going to be looking at specific offensive matchups here in the second quarter. When Seattle's got the football, how they can try to attack the Vikings, the best matchups to watch coming up in Sunday's primetime game. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As an avid weightlifter and distance runner, I'm always looking for an edge when it comes to nutrition, seeking delicious, healthy protein bars without the crazy additives. Since being diagnosed with celiac disease, my options have been pretty limited, until now. Enter in the Built Bar, a low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, gluten-free protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Built Bar now comes in 18 mouth-watering flavors, including 6 new delicious flavors such as caramel brownie and cookies and cream. My all-time favorite is peanut butter brownie, which is 20 grams of protein, just 3 grams of sugar, and 3 grams of net carbs. Since I had my first Built Bar, I never go without one when I hit the weight room or go for a jog. All Built Bars are 100% chocolate, nut and gluten-free, soft and easy to chew, and don't have the nasty aftertaste of competing protein bars. Sound too good to be true? Go to BuiltBar.com and build your own custom box with your choice of flavors using the code LOCKEDON for $10 off. You will also receive a free cooler with your first purchase while supplies last. So what are you waiting for? Change your workout game by going to BuiltBar.com and entering code LOCKEDON for $10 off. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me for our Wednesday show, my co-host, Rob Rang. Later in the show, we're going to be looking at some key matchups to watch when the Seahawks are on defense against a Vikings offense that's been playing much better as of late. Got off to a pretty slow start the first couple weeks of the season, but they've been humming at a much higher level here the last two games. But first, let's look at the Seahawks on offense. And Pete Carroll talks about this every time these teams get together. You have two coaching staffs that have very similar philosophies in a lot of regards. So you're going to be seeing a Vikings defense that wants to stop the run. They're going to want to try to create turnovers as much as they can. They're going to play physical defense, especially on the outside. That being said, this is a very young secondary. They don't have Xavier Rhodes anymore. They lost Mackenzie Alexander. He's now gone. They've got a whole new host of players back there. Cam Dantzler, formerly of Mississippi State, a rookie. He's been starting. They've got Mike Hughes, who's now in his third year out of UCF. Holton Hill, former player out of Texas that's had some issues staying on the field with suspensions. And then Jeff Gladney, their first-round pick this year out of TCU. So there's a lot of talent there. But as we mentioned with A.J. Terrell in week one of the Falcons, just because there's a lot of talent, you are a rookie. And you are going up against Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, and David Moore, who, by the way, David Moore has had a lot of success against this football team in the past. This, again, looks like another game that Russell Wilson should be licking his lips, thinking, I've got a chance to get some big plays with the downfield passing game against this inexperienced secondary.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that, Corb. I mean, it is a very talented secondary, as you mentioned. A lot of early draft picks that have been utilized by Rick Spielman, the general manager of the Vikings, on this part of their defense. But at the same time, it has not translated into a lot of big plays for this team. You mentioned Holton Hill. I mean, this is an undrafted free agent who has actually been starting ahead of some of those early draft picks when he has been healthy. Fortunately for the Minnesota Vikings, after struggling with all kinds of injuries to a lot of these cornerbacks, including a former first-round pick and former starter Mike Hughes, he has been able to return back to the field for the Vikings. So I think that this is going to be a fairly healthy Minnesota Vikings cornerback group that's going to be going up against the Seahawks. But at the same time, I mean, I don't know that there's a corner in the NFL that can handle DK Metcalf right now. And Tyler Lockett pocket with just the way that they hit, as savvy of a route runner as he is. You know, the Minnesota Vikings have some really talented athletes, but they're not necessarily the most instinctive players that you've ever seen in the past. They've been guys that have been able to beat you with their length, like a Dantzler or a Holton Hill, as I mentioned, or with their straight line speed, like their rookie this year, first round guy Jeff Gladney out of TCU. I mean, 4.3 guy, but at the same time is a guy that you can beat him with technique. And so considering that all of the different just superstar level play that they're the Seahawks are seeing at the wide receiver position, and I'm happy that you mentioned David Moore. We've talked about him before, really taking, just absolutely breaking out this season. And then of course the biggest story is Russell Wilson. I mean, as we've talked about before, the defense can play as good as it wants to. The perfect pass is still going to beat you, and Russell Wilson is just playing at such an incredible level right now. I think that this is a matchup to watch, and I think it's a matchup that the Seahawks can win.
Yeah, I think that this is absolutely in favor of the Seahawks, as it has been the last couple of weeks. I actually thought the Dolphins did a fairly decent job for the most part last week. They gave up some big plays, obviously, but a lot of the explosives downfield were taken away. The Vikings are going to be trying to do that. I think it's going to be a difficult task, though, for these very young corners that they've got there. There's certainly some skill there if Mike Zimmer's coaching staff can coach these guys up and develop them. That can end up being a very formidable corner group. But I still, with this particular matchup still being early in the season, you have two rookies playing extensive snaps for that secondary. I think that this is a matchup that favors Seattle. Another one that I think favors the Seahawks, and you don't often hear this going into the 2020 season, but I really like the interior offensive line, Mike Iupati, Ethan Posick, and Damian Lewis. Those three guys in the middle going against a Vikings defense that lost Linval Joseph in the offseason, their big run-stuffing defensive tackle. They released him. They have Shamar Stephen, former Seahawk there. Not a great run defender necessarily. Jaleel Johnson is the other starter. And they're also missing a big linebacker in terms of run defense in Anthony Barr, who's now out for the season. I think that interior offensive line has a real chance to manhandle Minnesota's interior defense. And if they're able to do that with up front, I think Chris Carson, Carlos Hyde, and company are going to have a big game. And it's worth noting, the Seahawks have dominated on the ground the last two times these teams have played, and I think the matchup is more favorable when you look at the offensive talent the Seahawks have up front compared to what Minnesota now has in the middle of their defense.
I absolutely agree with you. I mean, for so long, the Minnesota Vikings are almost synonymous with really tough defense. But you mentioned the loss of Anthony Barr due to injury, as well as Linval Joseph. This is a Minnesota Vikings team that basically is kind of playing with one hand behind their back on the defensive side of the ball. We talked about with the general manager, Rick Spielman, who, in my opinion, is one of the better general managers in the league. I really like the way that he's built his roster. All the talent they have that we talked about in the secondary. But that was with the understanding that you would have some dynamic edge rushers. And we'll talk about Ngakoue, who the Vikings were able to trade from Jacksonville. But they also thought that they would be pairing him with Danielle Hunter. They previously had Everson Griffin. I mean, you take away Danielle Hunter, Everson Griffin, and Linval Joseph from a defensive line, and suddenly you're basically, as I said, you're kind of working with one hand tied behind your back. And you know the Seahawks want to be aggressive. They want to let Russell Wilson throw the football. But I think that this is a game plan, Corbin, that the Seahawks are going to come in and they're going to want to try and establish the run right off the bat, because the Minnesota Vikings have not been as successful in doing so as far as slowing down opposing running games. And that really still remains the identity of this team. And again, kind of like we talked about with the secondary, again, while Minnesota is very athletic and talented in the secondary, they lack experience. They have some experience along the defensive line. They're just not quite as physical. They're not as big. I think that this is, again, another matchup the Seahawks offense should be able to exploit.
And you mentioned Ngakoue. I don't think he's a great run defender. He is a fantastic edge rusher, but he is a player that when you're missing Danielle Hunter and you don't have Everson Griffin playing the other end spot, I'm an offensive coordinator. I'm looking, I'm saying, you know what? I'm going to slow down your pass rush by running at you. And so he is another player that I would have circled like, you know what? I can take advantage of you. I can get Chris Carson going downhill. I can get Carlos Hyde going downhill. That outside zone running game, I think that you can take advantage of him being out there. Now, if you're not able to run the ball effectively and a guy like Ngakoue can really pin his ears back, then he can be a nightmare off the edge. There's a reason they traded for him, and there's a reason that you and I talked about the Seahawks looking at him before the Jamal Adams trade happened. Maybe he could come to Seattle. He is a factor, a really good athletic pass rusher, but I think you can run at him. So I think those are matchups to watch there. And I don't often have Russell Wilson pitted against defenders when we talk about these matchups, but the Vikings still have one of the best safety tandems in the league. Harrison Smith, who's been an All-Pro, he's been a Pro Bowler a bunch of times. And then Anthony Harris, who led the NFL in interceptions last season. I think when you look at these two players, Harris has already had success against Russell Wilson. I absolutely think that this is a game where, yeah, those corners on the outside might be susceptible, but those two safeties, Russell Wilson has to know where they are at all times. They move them all over the place. They are dynamic playmakers against the run and in coverage. To me, those are the two players on this defense that you have to know at all times where they're at, and you have to be able to account for where they're at, because if you don't, they're going to burn you.
Yeah, they absolutely can. You know, you're right, Corbin, in that the Seahawks and the Vikings do a lot of things very similarly. And one of the things that I think that they do the most similarly is the way that they employ their safeties, especially now when the Seahawks are using Jamal Adams as being that edge rusher, or being that blitzer, that edge rusher. That's something that the Vikings do a little bit with their safeties. They put them in advantageous positions and allow them to make some big plays. Harrison Smith has been just an absolute superstar since the Vikings selected him out of Notre Dame all those years ago. And Anthony Harris, as you mentioned, with his ball skills, his ability to basically, you know, change the game just with the turnover factor. That's what the Seahawks have been kind of living and dying with here over the first month of the NFL season, is their ability to create some turnovers. So with the Vikings missing some of the big names that they've had on the defensive line, as well as linebackers, you mentioned with Anthony Barr, the safety position is the one position that I think that the Seahawks have to be very, very careful of. And so I think that Russell Wilson has to make sure that he is distributing the ball, not being basically as kind of narrow-minded, frankly, as Kirk Cousins has been for the Minnesota Vikings. We'll talk about that in a moment. But the Vikings have basically focused in on just a couple of pass catchers. That's one of the things that's been so spectacular about the Seahawks so far, and I would expect that to continue in this game, is really to try to use as many different options as you possibly can in the receiving game to spread out Minnesota's safeties and the rest of their defenders as well.
And that's what they were able to do last year. They were able to hit on a few of those big plays, and there were some major coverage breakdowns in terms of assignments from the Vikings, too. With all the young players that they're going to have out there at the corner position, the safeties might be in the right spot, but that's another area where you may be able to take advantage of this Vikings defense. They're just so young at those corner spots. There might be a few coverage miscues. You do that against Russell Wilson, he is going to make you pay. So that is something worth watching on Sunday night at CenturyLink Field. We come back in the third quarter. We're going to switch gears to when the Seahawks are on defense trying to defend against a Vikings offense with plenty of weapons, and they're starting to get hot the last couple of weeks. Some key matchups to watch when we get to the game on Sunday night. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Wednesday edition. This is your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Rob Rang. Got a big game coming up at CenturyLink Field on Sunday night, a primetime matchup. Seems like it happens every year. The Vikings fly out to Seattle to play the Seahawks in primetime. And this time, a little different circumstances, at least for one team. Last year, the Vikings came in with an 8-3 record. The Seahawks were 9-2. So both these teams were in the hunt, not just for playoff spots, but top seeds in the NFC. And this year, Vikings off to a pretty rough start at 1-3. They did win their first game of the season last week. Rob, this offense for Minnesota, we know they lost Stephon Diggs, but it's a group that seems like the last couple weeks they're starting to figure things out. They've still got Dalvin Cook. They've got Justin Jefferson, the outstanding rookie receiver out of LSU. And of course, Adam Thielen is back healthy. The Seahawks did not see him last year. He did not play in the game when these two teams were against each other. So I think we've got to start off, and we're looking at Seahawks defensive matchups. We have to start with that secondary, Quentin Dunbar, Shaquille Griffin, Trey Flowers. We don't know if Dunbar is even going to play yet. It sounds like Pete Carroll's optimistic, but regardless of who's out there, you're going to have to deal with a two-headed monster in Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson, who has arguably been the best receiver in the NFL the last 2 weeks.
He has been absolutely spectacular these last couple of weeks, but you were absolutely right too, though, Corbin, in mentioning a two-headed monster, and that would be one of the things that I would jump out at is mentioning is something that the Seahawks can take a little bit of solace in. You look at the Minnesota Vikings statistics over the first four games. Adam Thielen has 20 receptions for 284 yards and four touchdowns. Four games, four touchdowns. Justin Jefferson has 20 receptions, again, 16 receptions for 348 yards, so 100 yards almost more than Adam Thielen, but only the one touchdown. And nobody else on their team, other than Dalvin Cook, which we're gonna spend a lot of time talking about Dalvin Cook in a couple of minutes. But as far as the Minnesota Vikings receiving options, you know, you really have Adam Thielen, who's terrific, and Justin Jefferson, who also is terrific, but then you don't have another receiver other than Dalvin Cook, the running back, who has as many as six receptions. And Kyle Rudolph, the tight end, has six receptions in four games. Olabisi Johnson, former receiver out of Colorado State, four receptions in four games. I mean, it's pretty much the Minnesota Vikings. Every time that Kirk Cousins drops back, he's going to throw the ball to Thielen. He's going to throw the ball to Justin Jefferson, who, again, as you just mentioned, Corbin, is absolutely exploding over these last 2 weeks. And so maybe that is the answer for the loss of Stephon Diggs. But I think this is bigger than just the loss of the talent that's on the field in, like, say, a player like Stephon Diggs. I think this comes back to the offensive coordinator and the fact that we, of course, did not have a traditional training camp, did not have a traditional preseason. The Minnesota Vikings lost their offensive coordinator, Kevin Stefanski, who's now is the head coach for the Cleveland Browns. You mentioned that Minnesota is 1-3. The Cleveland Browns are 3-1 with Kevin Stefanski calling the plays for them right now. And I think that there's just been some transition here for Kirk Cousins in this offense. So like I mentioned with the Vikings with one hand on their back, behind their back on the defensive side of the ball, you know, they've been just the same way on the offensive side of the ball, and that's been a big reason why they're 1-3 at this point. But ultimately, I agree with you. The Seahawks secondary has been absolutely torched to this point. Kirk Cousins is a terrific player, as are Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson. I think that they are going to be able to make some big plays. But at the same time, again, I think this is a matchup the Seahawks should be able to handle.
And that might not be the one they need to worry about the most. You and I were talking about this before the show, and I know our analytics people out there are not going to appreciate what I'm going to have to say here next, because, you know, it's all about the passing game in today's game. But when you're talking about Vikings and Seahawks getting together, it's much like what I said with getting Chris Carson and Carlos Hyde going for the Seahawks. Dalvin Cook has been phenomenal this year for the Vikings. He leads the NFL with 424 rushing yards. He leads the NFL with six rushing touchdowns. He went for 181 against the Titans defense 2 weeks ago, 130 last weekend against the Texans with two touchdowns. And he's also a guy that can do a lot of damage in the receiving game. He has not done much to this point, just seven receptions for 40 yards, but last year, he had 53 receptions for over 500 yards. The year before that, he had a couple touchdowns, 40 receptions. So Dalvin Cook, to me, is the number one priority for this Seahawks defense. You cannot let him get going on the ground, because once you do that, and Kirk Cousins is able to lean back on his play-action game, and then he can get the football to Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen, Kyle Rudolph, suddenly this becomes an offense that's much more difficult to stop. I would want Kirk Cousins to beat me, which is really what the Seahawks have forced him to try to do the last two times these teams have played, and he hasn't been able to do it.
Exactly. Now Kirk Cousins is among the most competitive people in the league, and so I don't want to be the one who is saying anything that's going to basically be put up on his bulletin board, because I just know how that Kirk Cousins operates, and he has been competing against Russell Wilson going back to their days in the Big Ten. But at the same time, Corbin, I think that you're absolutely right. I don't think that Dalvin Cook is just priority number one. I think he's priority number one, priority number two, priority number three. I mean, I think that if the Seahawks can slow down Dalvin Cook, then I think that they really do have a good chance of winning this game, and basically controlling this game from the outset the way that they did, at least in my opinion, with the Miami Dolphins a week ago. That said, again, Kirk Cousins and the weapons that he has on the outside, I would not put it past the Minnesota Vikings to be able to try and get well real quick by surprising the Seahawks in this game. I mentioned before just the kind of adjustment that they've had to make with the offensive coordinator, Kevin Stefanski, now in Minnesota. Well, the guy that Mike Zimmer replaced him with, Gary Kubiak, is one of the all-time great play callers, and absolutely has had a huge impact on Dalvin Cook's success. And you're right to mention that he leads the NFL in rushing yards. He leads the NFL in rushing touchdowns. But that's interesting. 6 rushing touchdowns in 4 games. Obviously, he's been very effective. But Kirk Cousins, as I mentioned before, is struggling a little bit. 6 touchdowns in 4 games for Kirk Cousins as well, throwing the ball, 6 interceptions as well. So you're right. The way to slow down the Minnesota Vikings is to basically try to swallow up Dalvin Cook and force Kirk Cousins to beat you, because he will throw the ball into coverage at times. And so if you're able to slow down Dalvin Cook, then I think that you're able to slow down the Minnesota Vikings.
And the Seahawks have been able to do it the last 2 times they have played the Vikings. They have held him to an average of 42 rushing yards. He scored 1 touchdown, which was at the very end of the 2018 matchup when the Seahawks were already up 21-0. The game had already been decided. So that being said, this is a running back that can very quickly get to 100, 120 yards on you, and that's what he's done the last 2 weeks as this offense has started to get going. So this is going to be a tough test for Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, and Cody Barton, your linebackers, because Dalvin Cook is a very powerful running back. He gets to that second level. He can break tackles. Their backup, Alexander Mattison, is a really solid backup running back as well. So tough game coming up for the linebackers, trying to slow down the run game and kind of feeding off that. You talked about the last quarter. We looked at that offensive line, the interior for the Seahawks, having an advantage against the defensive line for the Vikings. And I think you can make an argument on the flip side, especially if a certain Snacks Harrison plays in this game. You put him with Jaren Reed and Puna Ford against Garrett Bradbury, Drew Samaya, and Dakota Dozier. This looks to me like a matchup that the Seahawks can win. And if they are able to win in the interior of their offensive line, it's going to make it much tougher for the Vikings to get Dalvin Cook going. And interior pressure has been a nightmare for Kirk Cousins over the years as well.
It absolutely has. And so I think that that's a fascinating matchup to watch. Now, I know that there's a lot of people out there who watch the NFL games, and all they care about is fantasy football. They're watching the ball. They're watching the quarterback, the wide receivers, the running backs. They don't care about what's happening at the line of scrimmage. But, you know, Corbin, you as a former player and coach yourself, me as a former player and coach myself, and, you know, the scouting aspect of it, I love the play at the line of scrimmage, especially when you have 2 defensive-minded head coaches like you have here with Pete Carroll and Mike Zimmer. And so I think that this game really is going to come down to the line of scrimmage and who is able to run the ball more effectively. As we've talked about already, I do think those matchups kind of set up Seattle for some success here. But it's interesting when you look at the Minnesota Vikings and the way that they've kind of created their roster, and the fact that they do have some big burly guards. They have a very athletic center, former first round pick in Garrett Bradbury. I think that this is a really interesting matchup. And you talked about Seattle's linebackers. I think that if Garrett Bradbury, at his best, he is one of the absolute best at getting to the second level and being able to scoop up and hit those linebackers. So if the Seahawks have a guy like Damon Harrison able to hold up at the point of attack, and he certainly can do so, then I think that that is going to allow Seattle's linebackers to basically be able to control the game as they have so many times with Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright specifically, control the game with their straight line speed, their lateral agility, their instincts. But at the same time, if Minnesota is able to get some push on Seattle's run their defensive line, then I think that this game can switch really quickly. And so to me, that is a matchup absolutely to be watching. One, I think that Seattle should be able to play well. I think that they're expecting to be able to do so. But at the same time, the fact that they did bring in Harrison to me suggests the Seahawks are a little bit nervous about their run defense statistics. I know they look really good, but as some have pointed out, the Seahawks just have not had a team that they've had to face so far that really has stuck to the run. And the Minnesota Vikings will stick to the run. So this is going to be a bigger test. It'll be interesting to see if they bring in their newest big bodies to be able to combat that.
That might be another reason they went out and got Jonathan Bullard too. So you've got Bullard that you signed, a bigger body defensive end. He's going to be able to play. Damon Harrison, we don't know yet, but I would hedge bets right now that he is going to be suiting up for this game. He might not play a ton of snaps, but he knows the Minnesota Vikings very well after playing the last couple of years with the Detroit Lions. He's played against them. So this is a matchup against a familiar opponent. He should be able to step in and give you some snaps right away. And that could be big, as you said, with an athletic center like that. If you can hold him up at the line of scrimmage, and Damon Harrison is as good as anybody at doing that, then that makes life a lot easier for those linebackers that are trying to keep free and make plays against the run game. And they're going to need to do that to be able to slow down Dalvin Cook in this contest. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at CorbinSmithNFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up tomorrow, it's Crossover Thursday. I'll be joining Luke Braun of Locked On Vikings to continue taking a deeper dive into this upcoming Week 5 matchup between the Seahawks and Vikings at CenturyLink Field. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Go Hawks!